Good evening and welcome to the regularly scheduled meeting of the Gibraltar Area School District Board of Education. This meeting is being held on Monday, August 9th, 2021. The school board began the evening at 6 o'clock by moving into executive session per Wisconsin statutes 19.85 per N1 per NC to discuss employee personnel matters. The board met in closed session for approximately 40 minutes, conducted its business, reconvened to open session, and then waiting until 7 o'clock to address its public at this time. We have completed the first and the second items on our agenda for the evening and are ready for the third item to approve the minutes of the regular board meeting on July 26th.
Before I make a motion, I do have two corrections and a clarification I'd like to ask for the clarification before that.
Please do so prior to your motion.
Thank you. Mrs. Van Meer, can you please clarify in the reopening plan information with the not requiring masks outdoor for K through 12, is that only for recess or for all outdoor activities? I ask because a letter to parents received said outdoor activities. I believe you said outdoors in general at our meeting, our last meeting, but the minutes and the student handbooks only mention outdoor recess. And I think it's important to clarify as our district offers many outdoor learning opportunities in addition to outdoor recess.
Yes, all outdoor activities.
Thank you. I think that clarification then should be reflected in those minutes with a change from recess to outdoors. And then the other two corrections are that the motions in and out of closed session were roll call votes, so the aye dash all should be removed from both of those. And with those corrections, I move to approve the minutes of the regular board meeting on July 26th with corrections.
Second.
We have a motion by Sherman, a second by Ward to approve the minutes of the regular board meeting on July 26th with the corrections mentioned prior to the motion. Is there any further discussion of the approval of the minutes of that meeting? Hearing none, those in favor of the motion to approve, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion passes. Item number four this evening is communication.
Dr. Seifer, I'm going to refer that list to you. I do have a few names, but I think there are more.
Thank you, Mrs. Van Meer. Mrs. Sherman, you keep track of our communications for any person who submitted a letter after our closing time for letter acceptance at a scheduled meeting. If we're understanding correctly, there were two items that were submitted at that time, Jennifer Davis and
Britta Nelson.
And Britta Nelson. So we should acknowledge that we received mail at about July 26th. From parents, interested parties, that now has been read into our meeting minutes for this meeting. We have not received any mail to our knowledge since that meeting. We did receive mail today, but I remind everyone that mail that's received after the close of business on Friday, prior to a meeting on Monday, is carried over to the next regularly scheduled meeting. Hearing no communications, we'll move on to item number five this evening, open discussion. We will first hear board members who wish to bring issues, items, information to the board for open discussion. Then we will turn to our public with regard to what they would wish to have the board know in open discussion this evening. Are there any board members who would wish to begin this conversation? Hearing none, let us turn to the folks that were present this evening in person. Let our minutes show that we have four persons who've come this evening in person to speak to the board or to observe the board at its work. We also this evening have 17 attendees who are remotely participating in our meeting. If you wish to address the board this evening, please approach the lectern. State your name, and the board is here to listen.
First off, my name is Ivan Bredenhagen. First, thank you guys for allowing me the opportunity to speak and address you with this issue. I've put my comment in a letter form, so I'm just going to read it back to you as I organize my thoughts that way. My name is Ivan Bredenhagen. I'm a Gibraltar alum and a concerned parent of a student with severe food, peanuts and tree nuts allergies. I'm here to speak to the board today to discuss the topic of food allergies and how this school district addresses keeping the children safe. Currently, it is my understanding that the school policy is to place the allergy-affected student at an allergy table where the setting is more controlled. The student may invite a friend to sit with them and keep them company during the lunch period. To my knowledge, there is no monitoring of what the students invited to the allergy table bring with them. No control system for keeping the children with allergies safe. The rest of the student population is allowed to utilize the same lunchroom with whatever allergens they may carry with them. The reason I am addressing this today is because after watching the great care and extreme caution the school district has taken to ensure keeping other children safe from the spread of COVID-19, they've acted blindly to the other huge risks they're taking in failing to keep children with food allergies safe. Many other districts have clear allergy policies. Go nut free. Provide other healthy options to the students and demand that allergens are not sent from home in packed lunches. This will ensure that no student needs to eat lunch in fear of their health being in danger. I'm asking that the district will instill a policy that no nuts be brought onto the Gibraltar school campus so children with food allergies can feel safe and not at risk for a potential allergic response that could result in death. While the logic of an allergy table probably seemed quite simple and foolproof at its inception, please take a moment to consider the logic if we conversely requested a high-risk room where students likely to be harmed by COVID-19 were encouraged to spend their school day. This idea seems barbaric and cruel, because it is. Yet we are so comfortable telling these young impressionable children to go and sit alone by themselves so they are safe. It would be very easy to rattle off statistics and results from many various studies that have been performed regarding reaction rates and mortality rates with allergies. But I think the easiest way to realize our policy is outdated is to compare it to other policies. If this is the message we are sending, then I think that you as a board are leaving yourself very exposed to a systematic deconstruction of all of your policies. I encourage you as a school board to take a safer, more caring, and more common sense approach and look at this policy in particular. I believe that you will find a much more safe and simple plan can be instilled. Thank you again.
Thank you, Mr. Bredenhagen. Thank you for sending also your, as you addressed the board through a letter, your letter today. Please know, as I said, when we were addressing open communications, that letters that are received are carried to the next meeting. However, a letter such as yours and another that we received today are so timely that we forwarded on to our administrator so that we can address it more quickly than waiting. I read very carefully your letter, your concerns. Please know that the board and the administration will be addressing this.
Can you hear me? Yeah, okay. Dear Gibraltar School Board members, with the recent discussions over COVID concerns in our school, I am writing to you with my own family's concern. My son, who will be entering third grade at Gibraltar, has a severe peanut and tree nut allergy. So bad, he must carry an EpiPen everywhere he goes in case he comes in contact and goes into anaphylactic shock. When I hear people discussing the statistics of how COVID affects young children, I wonder why nothing has been done by Gibraltar for children with food allergies in our school, specifically peanuts and tree nuts. You know that peanut allergies alone affect an estimated 1.2% of the overall U.S. population and about 2.5% of the pediatric population. They're the most common food allergy in children, affecting about 25% of those with a food allergy, and are the leading cause of allergy-related death in children. For those fearing COVID-related hospitalizations and deaths among children at our school and in our community, I ask you to consider this. Let's turn some of our focus on the hospitalizations and deaths from peanut and tree nut allergies. This is a serious danger. The concern for so long has been about COVID in our school, and now it's time, excuse me, and now it's time for you to make allergies the same concern. Make it fair for my family and many other families in our community by turning Gibraltar into a peanut and tree nut free school. Close your eyes and imagine this. Your child comes home from their very first day of kindergarten. When you ask how their day was, they say it was fine. When you ask how lunch was, because you had been worried about what would happen at his separate nut-free table, they again say it was fine, followed with, a couple teachers I didn't know sat by me because I was sitting alone. Who wants to sit at a separate lunch table while watching their friends across the cafeteria? He is being isolated and made to feel different. He can't eat the birthday cupcakes brought to school by his classmates. Rather, he has to bring his own snack to eat while watching the other kids enjoy that special birthday treat. Not only do we worry about an allergic reaction, but we also have to worry about our child feeling different, left out, or even bullied for his allergy. He's been made to sit in the very front assigned seat of our school bus with all the younger children. And I didn't even get into my letter of things that have happened to him on the school bus by sitting in that front seat with all the young children. He's truly been bullied. For those of you with children, grandchildren, nieces, nephews, and friends attending Gibraltar, my children are mandated to wear a mask to protect your children. So please protect mine by not sending peanuts or tree nuts to school with yours. I beg you to please consider making Gibraltar a nut-free school. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Tarsivia. Again, as I said to Mr. Breitenhagen, we received your letter today as well, forwarded around to the board members and to our administration. Please know that you will be getting an administrative response to this letter, and the board will be looking at its policies. We very much appreciate your bringing to our attention your concerns so that as we begin a new school year, we can have a clear understanding for all students, staff, and parents with regard to our policies and how clearly we want to treat every child and provide for them the best education possible in the best environment. Thank you for speaking to us this evening. Is there any other person who wishes to address us this evening?
Dr. Seiper, you have Aaron Erickson with their hand up. I'll go ahead and move them over for you.
Please do.
Good evening. Sorry, it's Bob Gilby here. I'm using my wife's computer today. I just want to preface this by saying I'm making this statement as a parent, not as a member of staff. At the last board meeting, Ms. Vermeer went through the policies regarding school reopening in September. And one of the things that was mentioned concerned me and my family greatly. And that was that there will not be a virtual option. I'd like the board to consider an optional virtual learning for the under 12-year-olds based on how the next few weeks go in particular, for several reasons. kids, not only back in my country of Australia, who which is currently being ravaged by the Delta variant, but other kids here in America are going back to school in some places, particularly down south, and their schools are being shut down and forced to isolate because they are getting sick. And it's Delta, all the evidence is coming out saying Delta is more contagious. It is more infectious and it is easier to spread. In Australia, they were able to determine that it was actually the hotel quarantine that caused the current outbreak with the Delta variant. People in different hotel rooms with completely separate HVAC systems in those hotel rooms that was still spreading airborne through those hotels. And I realize the school has a brand new ionization system and it's wonderful, but every element that can be done to keep our kids safe until they can get vaccinated should be observed. A lot of us have spent the last 18 months isolating as much as we can from the world, essentially. My son, who's starting kindergarten in a couple of weeks, he hasn't seen anyone his own age since March last year because we have been trying to keep him safe. Take into account as well with that, he has a newborn brother who was born in June of this year. And the risk of him bringing that virus back to the unvaccinated newborn is really high. It just concerns me that we just outright said no virtual learning unless the child is on an IEP on a case-to-case basis. And I know that we're not the only ones, but it's, we have to consider all the options for our family. And to completely rule out virtual as an option, even for just the first semester, until those kids, like, we originally planned on the kids being vaccinated in September, October, but now the CDC and all the other companies have all said that that's probably going to be more December, January, possibly even February before it's approved. That's a long time to risk sending our kids in. And I realize the optional masking for the high schoolers is a risky thing as well, because we have right now members of our community who have not been safe this entire time. And I'm not saying that our whole community has not been safe. There are members of the community who have not been safe, who, let's face it, are probably going to go to Disneyland, as an example, in the next 2-3 weeks before school goes back, as a last hurrah. We're down in Florida, down Disney World, Disneyland, it's running rampant through there. They're going to go there. They may catch it there and bring it back to our school. And it's worst case scenario. Again, last year we were lucky. We were so lucky. Personally, as a member of staff, I missed out on having to isolate 4 times by the sake of hours in the day. One time I did have to isolate. And it was lucky. It was pure luck every time that we didn't have transmission in the school. Pure luck. And the strict protocols that were put in place by Ms. Van Meer. These all work together. And it really does upset me and my family that we won't have a virtual option for the first half of this year. And I feel like if there is no virtual option for the first half of this year, with the case numbers starting to rise again, that we may be forced to unenroll our son before the school year even begins and enroll him in a homeschooling program just for his safety as well as the safety of our family. All of that upsets us, and we just really would like it if the board would reconsider a virtual option for at least the first part of the year. And even just an hour ago, the board was in a closed session, so they may not have seen it, but Door County Daily News were just announced that Door County is requiring masking within all government buildings again, as the level has raised to substantial risk. So I would like the board to consider all these things, and thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Gilby. We very much appreciate your comments this evening. The board does not have a discussion or an action item this evening to discuss remote education, but I know that you'll want to pay attention to the conversation of the administration and the board in our next agenda item when we are talking about unmasking K-6, but you'll pay attention to the rest of the story that is talked about under that discussion. Thank you for addressing the board this evening. Are there any other persons who wish to address the board this evening? Mrs. Van Meer, are there any hands raised?
I am not
seeing any on my screen.
No.
I remind our audience that you may address the board on any of the posted agenda items as our meeting progresses. We are ready then for agenda item number 6, discuss transition planning to optional masking for students in grades K-6.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Seifer. Wow. When we put this on the agenda or talked about putting this on the agenda 2 weeks ago, our world was a little different than it is even now. And it, like I said, this virus, it just continues to evolve and change. And you never know from 1 minute to the next what's going to happen. So we're trying to make the best decisions we can to keep our children in environments that are the lowest risk we can have, while also prioritizing in-person learning and prioritizing their ability to participate in our extracurricular sports and activities, and all those things that, you know, we want them to be doing as children. They've already spent a year sacrificing a lot of that. And so to be able to try to move forward with those things, I think is really important, but it's a balance. And it's also about continuing to monitor the situation. As Mr. Gilby just pointed out, I didn't hear that announcement. It just happened in Door County just in the last hour or so. And that's what I mean. Every day it changes. So when we had this on the agenda to begin with, we were in a little bit different place. But I think this is still a really important discussion to have. It is something that our parents have asked us to have. I know the board wants to have that, to be open and transparent, to show that we have a plan, and that we really want to try to provide these options in the safest way possible. So for what I did for this discussion item, I took a look at the rationale that I began with in making the reopening handbook. And that is, the priority is in-person learning for all of our children. That's the priority. How do I do that in the safest way possible so that we can remain in person for all of our children? And that is a tough thing to do when you see what's happening. Having said that, we know that our children, and you've heard this so many times now, children that are in kindergarten through sixth grade, because some of the sixth graders are 12, some of them are younger or older, they don't have the option and their parents don't have the choice to vaccinate. The choice is that of the parent and the family, but then when you don't have a choice, for me as the superintendent, and it becomes our prerogative, our priority, to make sure that we are advocating and taking care of those who are vulnerable and who don't have options. And in order to do that, we need to provide them all of the other layers of protections that we do have and that we do know worked. We look at last year, we look at all the things we did, and we know that even though there was transmission, we cannot pinpoint any type of transmission in our school. And I believe that's because of the safety protocols, the masking, the social distancing, the podding, the way we ran our schedules, even though people didn't like those schedules, and I understand that. All of those things kept us from transmitting the virus within our building and closing down our campus. And I'm really proud of that. And the other thing I'm proud of is the fact that we had instruction every day. And I think a lot of people out and around don't recognize that because we were remote. They don't recognize that we had instruction for our children every single day during the middle of a pandemic. And I am very proud of that. And I am so proud of our teachers for all the work that they did, for the enormous responsibility they took on, trying to teach in person and remotely at the same time, learning all of the technology, learning a different way of delivering instruction. I'm so phenomenally proud of them. And I'm also very, very happy that we have a vaccination. I just wish that we had it for our younger kids and that parents had a choice on whether or not they wanted to give that to their kids, but we don't. And because we don't, it's my job to recommend that we continue masking, as I said before, for our kids in K-6 until a vaccination is available for children this age. I think the discussion for the board would be, how do we, once that option is available, how do we transition to optional masking while making sure that every parent, every child has had, every family has had that choice, has been able to make the choice if they choose to do it, that they've been given the appropriate time to set up the vaccination, the appropriate process for waiting with the Pfizer vaccine. And I want to thank, I know Mr. Schreier's not here tonight, but I want to thank him for helping me out with this because I was confused on the Moderna vaccine versus Pfizer. It's the Pfizer vaccine that would be a eligibility for children. And that is a 21-day in between shot one and shot two. So 21 days in between the two shots. And then they are not fully vaccinated until 2 weeks after the second shot. So you're looking at 5 weeks, but that's if someone can get right into the clinic and get a vaccination. If we have a large number of children getting vaccinated at the same time, that might make it a little tricky. So I'd like the board to think about that and talk about it. You know, I think we need to give a little more time frame than 5 weeks so that we're allowing everybody an opportunity to set up those appointments or clinics or vaccinations. So that would be my recommendation. I would also ask that we continue to monitor disease activity level in Door County, in our local school district, and within our building. Those are three very important things. And you can see, if you're looking at the data, you can kind of see the variant or the spikes happening in waves, and they keep moving up. And, you know, we're in Door County. I do, you know, I worry that eventually it's going to hit us, and I want to make sure that we're prepared. If you look at the way that reopening handbook was put together, we've changed how we're implementing things, but everything we did last year can be done this year as well, and it can be done quickly because we've already put it together. So I want the parents to feel good about that, knowing that we're just not sure about this variant, and I know that that causes great concerns, but please know that what we did last year, we can do again this year if we need to. So again, continuing to monitor, I think the disease activity level, but also making sure we're turning it in-house. And then I would also say not just our students and adults in the building, but also the families of those adults, of those children. We need to keep monitoring that as well, because that's where the spread's going to happen in our building, if it's going to happen. So, and as you are aware right now, they're saying the Delta variant is highly transmissible. It can spread by both vaccinated and unvaccinated people. The Door County Public Health Department and the CDC are recommending universal masking indoors, regardless of vaccination status. Door County is experiencing high levels. Just in the 2 weeks, I wrote this down just today so I could be as current as possible. But within the time period between our last board meeting and this board meeting, we noticed that the burden level has gone from medium to high in Door County. The hospital beds are at 78% being in use. ICU are at 80% now in use. The good news is this is what makes me happy, because the two things we want to look at are vaccination activity and disease activity. We should have high vaccination, low disease, and that opens up our doors to have more options. And right now I looked under the school district by location for our school district. We have, of our population of 5,652, 71% have received their first dose. And within that, 69% are completely vaccinated. That's something to be feel very good about, that in our little county, we have very high vaccination rates. And the other piece, I did take a look at the disease activity just in the last 7 days. The 7-day average of there are zero new positives, and the 7-day average for positives was 0.43. So that's good information to have. The negative news were 4. So 4 people tested negative in the last 7 days. The average has been have tested negative 4.29. So we're maintaining those pieces, and that gives me hope and optimism that we'll be able to continue to open up. And I know the board could probably talk about where were we when we were one of the very first school districts in the state of Wisconsin to close. School board, we did that, right? First ones to close. And where are we now? We're bringing kids in person. We're allowing families to make choice of vaccination. We're doing optional masking for those children who have a choice. And now we're looking at, when can we give some optional masking for our kids in the lower grades? We want to do that for them too, because none of us want to wear the mask. We don't want to, but we have to make sure that we're using the layers that we have while the risk is there. And so things are looking good, but I would strongly recommend that we keep monitoring this. I do have concerns about what this is going to look like by our next board meeting. And so I would open that up to the board for your just comments, discussions, and guidance to the administration.
Thank you, Mrs. Van Meer. This is not an action item. It's discussion this evening. The board's purpose is to provide our administration with parameters, with guidance, with regard to, in this first instance, are continuing to unmask our school population. Our conversation this evening should expand also into what is happening currently in our school district, in our county, in our community. But let's first talk about the guidance to the administration with regard to under what circumstances should the administration allow parents the option for having K-6 children attend school without masks. What are your thoughts?
I would ask for Mrs. Van Meer to speak with Public Health and DCMC to see in what time frame they believe they would be able to get that the 5 to 11-year-olds vaccinated. I don't know what it looked like when 12 to 17 was eligible. And if how quickly that happened, was that 2 weeks? Was that 5 weeks? How long did it take from everybody's trying to get appointments, there are no appointments available, to people are still scheduling, but we have appointments available, and everyone who wants the opportunity to get it, there are enough open appointments that they have the opportunity to still get it. That to me would be the guiding factor. I remember when the staff was eligible, and it took weeks before everybody was able to make an appointment who wanted to make an appointment. I mean, the first week was full almost instantly, and you were waiting at, you know, everyone was like, oh, this one is this time, and this one is this time. This is when they release appointments to get them. So I would want to really align that time frame with what I'm assuming would be DCMC or Public Health will be primarily handling these. I believe they were the primary vaccine providers for 12 to 17. What time frame they think, and then add the 5 weeks to that, and also leave ourselves a little room to say, here's what we anticipate. But if Public Health says, look, we're still maxed out on appointments and people who want them aren't getting them because we don't have enough appointments available, I think we need to continue until we kind of get the green light from them that says, yep, we really believe everyone in 5 to 11 year olds have had the opportunity to schedule those appointments.
Thank you. Others?
I would think that, and to corroborate what Mrs. Sherman said, I would think that an ideal situation would include a vaccine clinic on site. There are so many pieces of the puzzle that we don't know yet, but I do know of people who are holding private clinic or private vaccine clinics and businesses around the community. And then we have the opportunity for people who are eligible to have open vaccine clinics in different parts of the community. I realize that we're farther along, that the people who want to get the vaccine have mostly got it. That would be an ideal situation, but we don't know yet if that's a possibility. If that, we could treat it like a flu vaccine clinic here on site, like we do already at Gibraltar. So that would be ideal. I think to, again, corroborate what Ms. Sherman said, we need to work with a backward design model and look at the farthest date out once everybody has had the opportunity and those 5 weeks have passed, and then work our way backwards. I do not think that we should have the opportunity for people to just unmask as soon as their particular child has become vaccinated and fully immune. That seems a little bit chaotic to me. I think we need to have a hard date that is set in collaboration with the medical professionals in the community.
Yeah, I would concur. We can't go saying, okay, K through six that, okay, we will wait 8 weeks and then it's optional for everybody. Mm-hmm. If not everybody's had an opportunity. My guess is that with the vaccine supply being what it is now compared to what it was when all of us got our vaccines, that within a short period of time, there'll be ample vaccine and appointments in the county for people to get within a 2 week period of the vaccine being available. Mm-hmm. After that, you run the clock on the vaccinations and say, if it's Pfizer, it's, you know, another 5 weeks. If it's Moderna, it's another 6 weeks. So you come up with 8 or 9 weeks after it's available and you say, okay, masks are optional now. Assuming that we stay at a relatively low exposure rate to this variant. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Mr. Pia. Mr. Helm, thoughts?
No, I like your idea of an on-site vaccination clinic here. I think that would help expedite the process and also be a convenience factor for all of us. But I agree with the date timeline on that. We need to adhere to that so that it's a standard across for everyone and that people don't have an option. Okay, I'm doing this now, but we set that firm date.
Thank you, Mr. Helm. Mrs. Carrier.
I agree with what everybody else has been saying. I don't really have anything further to add, so.
As we make this consideration, it's under the continuing school board concern that we do protect our most vulnerable children. And today, those are children who are not vaccinated, that we continue to provide a safeguard for their attendance in school. Hence, we have agreed to our administrators' parameters of K-6 being masked. I think it's important that we set some picture as to what unmasking looks like, and that's what we're about. And I've heard four different components to that. There is the reality of the vaccination. It takes time. Depending upon the vaccination, it could be a 5 to 6 week period from first shot to an active vaccination. We also have to consider the window of time for all persons who are interested in vaccination to become vaccinated. I heard board members speak to the idea that we will not unmask individual students, but the school unmasks. I heard a concern that if we can, it would be great to have an on-site clinic so that parents who choose, could have children vaccinated at school or other sites, but this could be an option to them. I think the high ground that we always continue though is until we have vaccination, we need to continue to protect our most vulnerable children, those who are unvaccinated, and those who have medical fragile conditions. Any other board comments or guidance to our administrator?
Not on that, but as we talk about the other aspects of masking and this variant and where we are, and I agree with Mr. Piet, you know, unmasking depending on as long as, and I think we just need to, I appreciate Mrs. Van Meer is clearly keeping up on that and watching what's happening, and we need to continue to do that, and we need to prepare for a possibility that vaccinations might not be enough and that we might need to do full masking in this building at some point in the school year, depending on this variant. And I appreciate planning for unmasking. I think it is an important piece. I think we need to have that discussion. I think it's good for all of us to get an idea of what that's gonna look like and when we can start to think about that. But we also have to think conversely about going back, and Mrs. Van Meer is right, we've done it all, right? We've already been at that closure state and we've worked our way to this point. We can work our way back. And I just want wanted to remind people that, that's a possibility too, that we, it's, I want to look forward, but I don't want to forget we could go back.
Thank you, Mr. Sherman. You've moved us from a conversation that was headed towards the unmasking back into our need as a school board to plan for all exigencies. That given, as Mrs. Van Meer indicated, there are changes in protocols at Door County government buildings. There have been changes throughout the state in various locations in response to an increasing infection rate. That as a school board and in a school administration, we need to be understanding the evolving nature where we once thought several weeks ago that we could be moving towards unmasking. And we did for students 12 years and older and for staff working with those children. And we're taking a discussion this evening about how to continue that unmasking for K-6. We also need to be responsible for the truth that we can't predict what our future will hold, and infection rates could present in a way in which we move backwards with protocols, putting masks back on children over 12 and staff. We had a request this evening for the consideration of remote education, not as a condition, but as an option. Today, that's not a position the board has taken. We may face that in the future. I think it's important that in our conversation that we hold it in a timely enough fashion that our students, our parents, and our community can understand that the board's looking at this evolving pandemic. It does not always move in a straight line.
And I would just say with a reminder to our district community that the goal is still in person. Mm-hmm. And while we may have to look at remote at some point, depending, I mean, there have been flu years where the school has had to close and remote learning wasn't an option because so many kids and staff were out, not in the very immediate recent past, but I have heard that that has happened here. And I know it has happened in other districts in Wisconsin. That's not a new thing to the pandemic, but it can happen. But the goal is still to maintain in person. And so it may mean dialing things back and going back instead of forward so that we can maintain that in-person availability to our families and make that as safe as possible. So,
when you speak of going backwards or forwards, let us just keep the focus on are maintaining the best programming for a healthy environment for all children, which is not forwards, no backwards. It's responding to the realities of our pandemic and our needs as being the parent in absentia for children in school.
And let us also remember that there's a difference between being reactive and being responsive. And we moved very quickly in March 2020 from being reactive to proactive in how this school district responded to the virus. And now we're in a position where we can be responsive. We have tools at our disposal that we did not have this time last year. We have a wonderful filtration system that we did not have that we have now. We understand the virus better. We understand how it incubates, how it you know, infects people. And we understand more, but not all, of how children react to it. So even though we're in a situation where, according to the American Pediatric Association, we have 20% of all virus cases in the country are now children who are under the age of 12, we need to pay attention to that, but it's the difference between being responsive and using the tools that we have and just being reactive. So I think that's a good way to think about it.
Board members, any other guidance to our administrator? Mrs. Van Meer, what questions would you ask of the board, having heard their concerns, the comments, and their guidance to you?
I don't have any questions. I just want to thank you for your thoughts and your comments. Well said. Right down the same lines of where I want to be heading. And we do have all the tools in place to be responsive. And I think that's a beautiful way of putting it. We will continue to be responsive by paying attention to what's happening every single day. And so I think I have good guidance to get me started. I will let you know, we have an upcoming, I don't have my calendar with me right now, but we do have an upcoming superintendent meeting with Door County Medical Center and the health department. So I will bring up the vaccination clinics and timeframes, get their thoughts on what a timeframe might look like for vaccination of our younger children. And I'll bring that back to the board by probably by the next meeting, just so you have that information.
Thank you, Mrs. Van Meer. I'm looking, board members, I'm looking at our chat. As we have talked and Mrs. Van Meer has heard us, we have several folks who have written in on our chat. Britta Nelson says, yes, the efforts last year kept the kids and staff safe and the school open, keep it up. She goes on to write with all, and this was a question for Mrs. Van Meer, not for us, I believe. With 712 students optional masking, if my sixth grader is invited to be involved in volleyball for seventh and eighth grade, I'm assuming that is not requiring masks. I'm assuming that all sixth graders will be singled out to mask and no one else, question mark. I believe it is more fair to require masks for all K-12 until the cases go down statewide.
So
There's a question of a practice, Mrs. Van Meer.
Yes, I can answer that for you very quickly. It is the same thing that the board has just done this evening. If we have any children who do not have the opportunity or choice for vaccination, everyone will mask that's working with those children, including athletes, because our job is to protect those who do not have an option to protect themselves.
Thank you, Mrs. Van Meer. Mr. Gilby writes, I just had to fill in a form with proof of vaccination for several things for my child to start kindergarten. Why can we not do the same for COVID-19? I think that we are not yet to the point at which we'll see an addition to the state's vaccination requirement for school enrollment and attendance. That statute has not caught up with our realities to date, nor have we reached a political consensus in the state in which we will have any proof of vaccination for children, for staff, for employees in Wisconsin. That conversation is ongoing, and I think we will know better over time. But I would anticipate that there probably is some concept developing in which vaccination will be added to such things as measles and mumps. Mrs. Nelson writes back, your response helps, but still not sure about others in the school not masking. I'm understanding that you're unsure.
I was just gonna say, in addition to Mr. Gilby's comment is, if I remember correctly, and Mrs. Van Meer, correct me if I'm wrong, we have access to vaccinations status through our contract with DCMC that allows us to do the contact tracing in our building. Is that correct, Mrs. Van Meer?
Yes, because if we are going to have optional masking, we'll have some students in that pool that are not vaccinated that might not be wearing a mask, right? And so depending on what your exposure is, given close contacts and tracing, we have to also put into play mask or no mask, vaccinated or not vaccinated. So that's very true. Those things are all going to be in play, and the medical center and our nursing staff that we contract will help us with that because they do have access to all that information.
So, I just bring that up because even though we are not as a district requiring proof of vaccination, we have access to the information should we need it.
Correct. And we would need that to do proper isolation quarantining practices.
Thank you.
We have one last question on this agenda item, again for Mr. Gilby. Do the 712 vaccination levels show that it is safe to unmask? And I think that our response for Mrs. Van Meer has been, we have not been measuring the levels, we've been measuring the eligibility for vaccination. Children in 7th through 12th grade or over the age of 12 with parent consent as an option may be vaccinated. And we have followed that option by opening up then a parent option not to have their child wear a mask at school. We're not reading the level, we're reading the eligibility for vaccination. Board members, any further comments on this agenda item? Then we will go on to item number 7 of our agenda this evening, review and discuss administrative organizational chart.
Thank you. So I'm going to attempt to pull this up for you. I have been asked by the board to put together an administrative organizational chart, which will show you how, who is supervised by which administrator, how that works. It shows you the lines of communication. So when I say, who is your direct supervisor, it's very clear. I do want the board to be aware that Mrs. Eckhart, thank you very much, every year she updates and prepares a supervisory list that puts employees under our different administrators, so everyone has access to that information, and they do know who their direct supervisor is. So I just want to make that really clear. But, you know, we went, in the last 2 years, we have gone from 5 administrators to 3, and we've combined responsibilities, job responsibilities for our 3 administrators. As such, I really needed some time to take a look at where we are now and how might we operate with 3 administrators as effectively as possible. And so I did put together this chart, and I'm gonna see if I can share. I know the board has it. It is a rough draft, so please know that I will be making changes. In my draft, I'm not loving it too much because I thought the white would come out clearer. So I'm gonna play with it a little bit just to make sure. If I have to just white with black letters, I'll do something to make it better. But just to give you the overall view, so at the top, we do have the school board, who is ultimately, in charge of policy, in charge of evaluating the superintendent, and therefore the superintendent is right underneath the school board because they evaluate her, I'll say, because it's a her right now. And then underneath the superintendent, I have 2 levels. I have the administrative staff and their employees that they're responsible for. And then I have my district administrative staff that I am responsible for. Obviously, I do evaluate our principal, director of learning, athletic director. And so those are up a little bit ahead of the others, only because it's administrative licensure. So I'm kind of trying to show that difference. And then on the other side of the chart, you'll notice that I'm responsible for evaluating our district administrative assistant, who is also our board secretary, our maintenance directors, which we have co-maintenance directors, our food service director, our bus director, our director of technology, and our business manager. And if we just stay on this side of the chart, what you see underneath that are the employees or groups that they supervise and evaluate. So our co-maintenance directors would evaluate all of our custodians, AM, PM. Our food service director would evaluate our cooks. Bus director would evaluate the bus drivers and supervise. It's not just about evaluation, but supervising the day-to-day. The director of technology now has an assistant to the director, which we're very happy about. I know he's happy about that. And he will evaluate that individual. And then our business manager has an assistant business manager and also a business office assistant that she evaluates. So that's my administrative side for the district level. And then for my principals, athletic director, director of learning, you'll see that both of their roles are there with their titles. So they each have 2 major job role responsibilities. Well, a lot of job responsibilities under those two main roles. And so I start with our secondary principal athletic director. And what I've done that is a little different than what has happened in the past is I have divided our regular education teachers, our special education teachers, our support staff, specifically is divided by grade level. So the secondary principal is responsible for all grades 6 through 12, regular ed, special ed, and support staff. Does that mean the director of learning isn't going to be working collaboratively? No, but that is the, if you ask who is my direct supervisor, then the secondary principal would be your direct supervisor, but understanding you're working collaboratively with our director of learning. So just keeping that in mind. We also have the secondary counselor, the building secretary, and the secondary library. So the 6-12 part of the library, the programming and services are all under the supervision of the secondary principal. And then as athletic director on the other side of the chart, he is responsible for evaluating, supervising the assistant to the athletic director, as well as the athletic coaches, but the athletic coaches will be supervised in collaboration with the athletic director and the assistant to the athletic director. So they're going to work in collaboration on programming and general supervision, and the athletic director will work on mainly the evaluation process, okay? And then as I move to the elementary principal is also the director of learning, which also includes curriculum instruction, but also includes special education services. So under there, you're going to see different areas. I'll start with the K-5 elementary staff. Again, you will see that the regular education teachers, the special education teachers, and the support staff that work in K-5, their direct supervisor would be the elementary principal. However, they would work in collaboration with the special ed department, K-12. We also have an elementary counselor, a building secretary, and the elementary library programming and services that fall under K-5 would be underneath the elementary principal. That is a very unique situation in that you have one library in K-12, and you so the principal, elementary principal, and the secondary principal would collaborate together on the evaluation, but they would work directly with that person when it's issues in programming and services that are held in their building. Then also under the director of learning, as part of that special education RTI services, we have a GT coordinator, the reading specialists, K-12, the interventionist, K-12, the assessment coordinator, and the registrar. And then we do have some contracted services, but we also have our director of learning overseeing the general operations of those services, even though they are in contract with outside agencies. So our OTPT, as well as our nursing staff. So that's what I have for a rough draft. I'm very sure that there are things I can do to improve it or things that don't make sense. That's my first draft, and I would take any questions or comments from the board.
Thank you for creating this. I appreciate that even though we've asked you to create silos, you're also talking about the collaboration of a more flat organization as well. So thank you for that clarification. One question I have is about activities in addition to athletics, whether it would fall to the secondary principal athletic director to oversee advisors for activities and who they would report to, or if that would also be, depending on the grade level, would be reporting to each principal?
That's a really great question. I'm gonna write that down. I wanna talk to my admin a little bit about that. It makes sense that it would fit underneath the athletic director. That's the way we have been doing. The secondary principal has worked with as an activities person as well, but we have a lot of things like our running club, some other things that are falling into the elementary. So in my mind, it should fit, but if I do it that way, then I have to look at athletic director and say, well, are you in charge of all K-12 athletics, or do we divide it up by grade level too? Because we have some in the elementary. So it's a great question. Let me ponder that for a little bit. Let me talk to my principals and I will bring it back to you.
Yeah, and I want to piggyback on Lauren's because I think about the other activities, the math, I don't think it's a club, but the math team, the theater programs, we have the additional jazz band, pep band, those kinds of things.
Class advisors,
the Viking Voice, yearbooks, all of those things. I'm not sure where that falls. I appreciate that you're going to talk to the other administrators about it, but I just want to make sure those pieces, because I think those are, I'm not sure that those fall within that athletics category.
Thank you.
Other comments or observations by our board members?
I'll just agree with Lauren that I really appreciate this being laid out and seeing it, hearing the collaboration and putting pieces together. I think this is this will be a great piece of clarity for our entire district. So thank you.
I echo that. It's been a while since we've had such a line chart to understand who the reports communication goes through. You know, this evening we have Mrs. Wing and Mr. DeBrew present with us. So I can see the chart actually living a little bit here with regard to our working, the board's working directly with the superintendent and with our two building administrators. The chart helps us to understand how communications then flow beyond this meeting and through the life and times of the school. Thank you, Mrs. Van Meer.
Absolutely.
Board members, anything else on this agenda item this evening? I see nothing in our chat, no hands raised on this item. Item number 8 this evening is to review and discuss Door Community Auditorium Liaison Committee meeting held on July 27th.
Thank you. I do want to send this over to the representatives of that committee, but before I do, we had a recent meeting and a couple things we talked about are the fact that the DCA just recently purchased the Fish Creek Grill and they reviewed some expansion plans that they have. As they have been planning, it has come to our attention that office space in the auditorium will become vacant and available to use by the district. And I think that opens up a big discussion for our school board and potentially our campus maintenance, our finance committee. Like this opens up a big door. So I think just having the initial discussions and helping guide me to where you want me to go with these next potential steps. So take it away, representatives, if you want to talk a little bit about the meeting.
I think that, hang on a minute. I think that part of that discussion on the office space, we also need to recognize that we're probably a year away from that happening. So we've got quite a ways to go on that. Mm-hmm. They've got quite a ways to go on their building. They're pretty excited about it. It will open up some advantages for the school use of the auditorium as well, because we'll be able to use that parking lot across the street for handicap parking for our events as well. And it's a whole lot closer than a lot of our parking. And with the new walkway across the street, it'll help. So that won't end the cooperation between the DCA and the school at all. It may enhance it to some degree. They're planning to use the building for small concerts, outdoor activities. They're from time to time a liquor or a beer and wine license involved for musical events and things like some things they can't do at the school property. So they're pretty excited about it. In addition to that, we talked about some of their maintenance concerns, which Joe and Eric were there. So they'll be coming up at campus maintenance. Basically they had an air conditioning problem. They've got some leaking windows and some exterior repairs that need to be done. But I think those are all been ongoing, simple maintenance. One of the things that became clear to me when we were talking about the maintenance of the building is that it's easy for us to look at that as like another school building. Mm-hmm. And they look at it like a high-end event center, which is sad to say, it may be a little different view of what the facility looks like. You know, I think that from time to time, we take our own building maintenance for granted. Our students should always be proud to come to school here, and it should always look great. But it's easy to not always present that way. And I think sometimes the auditorium's at the end of the building and doesn't get the same attention the rest of the building gets. So I just think that's a general awareness issue that we need to pay attention to. And probably what the auditorium people look at is different than what the school people look at. Mm-hmm. So anyway, that's it. They also were talking about a new sign for their property, and I haven't seen any. They didn't have any drawings of it at the meeting, so we'd have to look at that. So anything else, Tina?
Or anything from other committee members who met?
Yeah,
with
anything or other committee members, yeah.
No, it was a constructive meeting. Mike and Mrs. Van Meer both just covered the major points. I'm so excited for the auditorium's acquisition of the property. It really is a good thing for our school. It's a good thing for this corner of Fish Creek and the arts in our community. And it's a wonderful, wonderful step forward for everybody. So we're very excited.
I did want to add one more thing that I had in my notes that I didn't bring up before was the rent concession that we made to them.
Yeah.
They're currently not able to sell all the tickets with their distancing requirements. So they had asked that we continue it to September and then revisit it. So we really have one or two more months, and then we'll revisit that issue again to see where we are with the virus and what they're going through. But, you know, I guess it's the school has always been supportive of the DCA, and I think we should continue that and try and work through this.
And to that end, Carrie Lewis made the point with us that optically it might seem strange that they are asking for a rent reduction at the same time making a capital purchase. And she reminded us, and I would remind the community, that there is a difference between operational expenses, which the coming and going of their funds based on ticket sales and the outgoing money of their rent to us is different than a capital purchase that would be funded by donors and people sponsoring. So two different buckets of money, important so that it doesn't look like they're coming to us saying, we can't afford anything, but also saying, but we're gonna buy this building. So an important distinction to make.
It's an important distinction, but I still wince.
Yes.
Understood. I will say, and to Mike's capacity comment that was on my list too, is they did go up to 60% this weekend. They do have some shows they are hoping to do at 100% capacity. However, they are also, like the school, very much monitoring this virus activity, and they are requiring masking and things of that. And they are doing protocols as well to ensure safety. So they will pull back or increase their capacity as much as they can. And I also want to just piggyback with Mike about the building and how sometimes it might be somewhat forgotten at the very end. But as we're having this discussion, and Carrie Lewis says, and what can we start planning for next year for your students? I'm reminded at how much the DCA means to our district and how important having this relationship with them is, because it isn't about them being renters in a building and putting on shows in the summer. That's great, but they are equally bringing in cultural, musical, all sorts of opportunities for our children that would not otherwise be available to us without their working to make those happen with us. So I appreciate that. That's also why I'm grateful Lauren mentioned about capital expenses versus operational expenses. I think we have to remember that we are being partners with the DCA is as beneficial to us as it is to them and to our students. So I appreciate that, and I will look forward to seeing these things in campus maintenance as well as coming up on our maintenance plan, because windows, outside siding, things are, well, it's stucco, but there appear to be some large repairs that we are going to have to look at over the coming years in that space after, what did we say, 30 years mm-hmm. That the auditorium has been there. There are large maintenance projects, and we need to get them onto our budgeting radar for upcoming years.
Thank you, Mrs. Sherman, Mr. Piatt, Mrs. Ward. I think that the conversation, though, brings us back to the position, the basic position, that the auditorium labeled the DCA is the school district's auditorium. It's our responsibility to maintain. It's our responsibility to take care of this facility as we do any other part of our school district. While the association for the DCA has a capital drive for expanding their scope, we still have the capital expenses of this house known as the DCA. And therefore, I think our facilities committee should be scheduling another visit, meeting with our maintenance staff, and getting to the schedule of our prior discussion of improvements and maintenance needs in the DCA, in our auditorium. It will be good with in-person teaching and learning to have access to the auditorium again this year mm-hmm. and to expand that. Any other board comments on this agenda item?
I would just say, when we're talking about having an open area in that space, I would just remind everyone that we are currently paying for warehouse space for our costume consortium that really needs a home, that would benefit from having a home in our district building. I don't know what size the space is of that office, or if any changes could be made, or if that would even be the right size to fit the needs of the costume consortium. But I would just throw that out there as a, while the wheels are spinning, let's throw that spoken.
We'll take that as a toss out.
Yes, that's all that is just a spoke in the turning wheels.
Oops. Thank you. Item number 9 this evening is to approve resignation from employment. Mrs. Van Meer.
Thank you, Dr. Seifer. We recently received a resignation from Logan Winker. He is resigning his position as assistant cross-country coach, and we thank him for all the support that he's given to the cross-country program.
Is there a motion to approve this resignation?
I move to approve the resignation of Logan Winker as the assistant cross-country coach.
I'll second.
We have a motion by Mrs. Ward, a second by Mrs. Sherman, to approve the resignation of Logan Winker as the assistant cross-country coach. Are there any questions or concerns regarding this motion? Hearing none, those in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The motion passes. Item number 10, approved job posting for an assistant cross-country coach.
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion by Sherman, a second by Mr. Piatt, to approve job posting for an assistant cross-country coach. Mrs. Van Meer, is there anything that we should know about this posting?
Yes, thank you. You know, we have had that, when we have a position, we do look to post for that position. Cross countries, you know, we need to have someone to help, right? But I also want the board to know that our new secondary principal, athletic director, Mr. DeBrew, he has a proposal that he's working on that I will have him bring either to extracurricular committee or the board. Board should let me know what they would like. That involves really outlining, and maybe you can speak to this a little bit more, Mr. DeBru. It's not an agenda item, but I think it's appropriate to talk about it. Do you want to just say in general what the main point of your proposal is going to be?
Yeah, so main concern would be that, I think the school district has done a thorough job looking at athletic postings and appropriate numbers, and I would like to give an overall look to that and try to bring a consistency there with an eye towards adequate supervision, coaching, safety issues. That's one of the things that we were talking about. Just as an example, I'll use the current opening. Cross country, great sport, outdoors. We've had the opportunity, which I think is really ideal, to combine middle school and high school athletes as far as coaching, training, etc. But when you do bring middle school and high school athletes together in cross country, that is going to lead to kids at various levels are going to spread out. And at some point you have to say to yourself, do we have sufficient supervision to guarantee coaching progress, safety, all of those sort of things? I understand the process that is in place to replace somebody like that, but with practices starting August 16th, and with student safety in mind and supervision, one must ask, you know, what can we look at timelines with regard to replacing positions like that and find ways to make sure that we can uphold our hiring process, but also provide for adequate supervision, safety, those sort of things when it comes to these openings. That's one of, I think, one of the big issues to address. A second one would be, again, looking at overall need for coaching. You know, much like we would look at numbers in any of our academic programs, you know, our coaches are our teachers in the afternoons, same with our advisors. And we have to ask, you know, if we see spikes in participation in a certain area, do we need to provide further supervision, coaching, et cetera, just like we would if our class sizes got too big? I guess one of those foundational ideas is that, you know, our advisors, our coaches, our supervisors are our teachers in our after-school athletic and co-curricular activities. And we have to make sure that we have an eye towards providing adequate supervision there as well. So that's I guess, just a general, more philosophical thrust what's going on. I'm going to continue to work with Mrs. Van Meer on trying to tailor those ideas to be very Gibraltar-specific and to address our needs and hopefully bring that forth to the board, whether it be through committee or as a whole for consideration.
Thank you, Mr. DeBru.
What I didn't hear, though, was that we shouldn't approve this posting, correct?
We should absolutely approve this posting.
Thank you. That's, I just wanted to confirm that that is what I heard in that discussion, so that.
Right. Thank you. We protracted this motion by asking if there's any concerns or anything that we should know. We now know it. We have a motion to approve a job posting. Those in favor of the motion, please say aye.
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 Aye. Opposed? The job is posted. Item number 11, approve employment of a speech and language pathologist.
Thank you. I am going to turn this over to Mrs. Wing now, and she will provide the board with her recommendation for our new speech and language pathologist.
I am pleased to recommend Miss Jackie Sherrod for hire as our new speech and language pathologist. Ms. Sherrod has 23 years of education experience as a speech and language pathologist and as an administrator. She has a master's in speech and language pathology from UW River Falls and completed the administrative leadership program at Marion University. Ms. Sherrod holds current Wisconsin licensures as a speech and language pathologist, director of pupil services, and a professional educator. Mrs. Shira has experience as a speech and language pathologist, a program support for speech and language pathologists, and has worked as a director of special education. Throughout the interview, I was impressed with her background in special education and passion for equality or equity for all students. Her references stated that she has tremendous background and knowledge and experience in speech and language pathology. She has an engaging personality and is committed to helping all students achieve maximum success. I am confident that Ms. Shira will do a great job as a Gibraltar Viking. And I ask that the board approve her hire pending if she's able to find a place to reside, which she is feverishly doing right now.
Well,
thank you, Mrs. Wayne.
Let's clarify that. You're not asking the board to conditionally hire her, whether she gets, okay. When you use the word pending, that's what it means. You just want to say, I hope she gets a job, but I still want you to approve her. And she did pass her background check, so you're good on that too.
Thank you, Mrs. Wayne. School board members, is there any question you have prior to a motion? We should say that in conversation, we understand that we have a significant number of children who need speech and language pathology. We have an open position. We have a candidate. This candidate has been successful in this district previously, and let's acknowledge that Mrs. Shira has been in our district and is returning to our district. Is there a motion?
I move to approve the employment of Jackie Shira as our speech and language pathologist for the 2021-2022 school year.
A second.
We have a motion by Mr. Piatt, a second by Mrs. Ward to approve the employment of Jackie Shira as our speech and language pathologist for the 2021-2022 school year. Are there any questions about the motion? Hearing none, those in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. The opposed? Mrs. Shira, welcome back. Item number 12 this evening is to approve job posting for a special education teacher.
Thank you. I am once again going to turn this over to Mrs. Wing, as it is her role as the Director of Pupil Services. She's going to talk to the board about some changes in our special ed numbers as well as needs. And she has a recommendation that she's hoping that you will approve. Well, I hope you will too, but I'll turn it over to you, Mrs. Wing.
Okay. Over the past 3 years, we have seen an increase in our special education population. In 2019-2020, we had 54 students. In 2020 and 2021, we had 56 students. And in 2021-2022, as of right now, we have 59 students. We have one initial meeting that is coming up in August that student most likely will qualify. We have one student that, as of right before this meeting, found out is returning, and we have three referrals in the fall, which means that our population will go up to 64 students. When I was hired last year as a special education teacher, there were actually two positions open. I filled one, leaving one position still vacant. Hiring me evened out the caseload to a manageable level. This year, our numbers have increased, and without replacing me, the caseloads have skyrocketed. I know the stress level that having a high caseload puts on a teacher. The higher the caseload, the more difficult it can be to ensure that the students' needs are being met. Some students have higher needs that take up a lot of a teacher's time, meaning that someone may not get what they need. With another teacher, we can better distribute the students based on needs. Average caseloads should be manageable at 8, and we have teachers right now, not counting those other initials or referrals or returning student, of 9 to 10. With this being said, to help us continue to provide the quality special education services that we currently provide, I recommend that the board hire a special education teacher to replace my vacant position.
Thank you, Mrs. Wing. School board members, any questions of Mrs. Wing and her recommendation?
I would just thank Mrs. Wing for taking the time to thoroughly review the caseloads and ensure that we are staffing to provide our students with the best opportunity for success.
I appreciated hearing the numbers of children who are being serviced through special education staffing. That is, our K-12 enrollment is declining, the numbers of children with learning challenges is increasing. We need to have staffing. Is there a motion for this posting?
I move to approve the job posting for a special education teacher.
Second.
We have a motion by Mrs. Sherman, a second by Mrs. Ward to approve a job posting for a special education teacher. Are there any questions regarding this motion? One comes to mind. Mrs. Wing, is there any particular disability that is associated with this posting?
No, there is not.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions? Those in favor of the motion, please say aye.
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 Aye. The opposed? The motion passes. We will post for a special education teacher. Item number 13 is to approve the elementary handbook.
So my building principals are getting a workout today. You guys are doing a phenomenal job. You really are. Thank you. I'm very impressed. I'm going to let Mrs. Wing continue speaking as the elementary principal. She has had an opportunity to go through the elementary handbook that was in place and make any adjustments. She can talk to you through those. Specifically, we were looking for alignment with our reopening handbook, but there could be other things that have been pointed out too. So Mrs. Wing, if you could go over that, just your highlights of what you're looking at and what you've changed.
All right, so in reviewing the handbook, I wanted to make sure that we added language that referenced in the reopening guidelines regarding masks and masks for recess, lunch, and then the lunchroom procedures, visitors needing to wear masks on buses. And then I added the no snacks, and I left out shared, so it should be no shared snacks. So that was updated. I just did a little bit of rearranging it a little bit. I put like the staff, faculty and staff administration list at the second page, just kind of did a little bit of just reorganizing it for flow. There was some redundancy and repetitiveness, so I tried to just kind of condense and put things, you know, in a little more orderly fashion and got rid of the repetitiveness. I took out the references to sixth grade since it's only fifth grade. So I changed that. I added the language to referencing that this year, again, we're gonna be the free and lunch and breakfast. I took, like, there was a lot of like different parts of the visitor guidelines. So I just put all in one section so that it was easier to read. Again, the language was relating to students on the right person. I condensed the language for under the academic section, I removed the language explained a little more clearly in the process of recording report cards. I updated the dates and added the dates that are observed by teachers. I added that to that spot there. I removed the section about dressing for triad because that was more for sixth grade. I cleaned up some grammatical spelling formatting errors. I changed the font to Maven Pro and then tried to clear up some inconsistency in bolding. And then today I added dates excluded for scheduling school activities in there. So that is what I did.
Mrs. Wing, one of the things I had sent you didn't mention, but I think it's pertinent given our open discussion comments tonight about peanut and tree nut free classrooms. Was that added to
that was added that yes.
section as well?
Yep.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mrs. Sherman. Any questions or comments to Mrs. Wing's report on the updated and edited elementary handbook?
Just thank you, Mrs. Wing, for the time and effort you put into that, coming in with a full load already waiting for you upon arrival. And I very much appreciated this handbook as both a board member, but as a parent, I found it very easy to read and understand. So I thank you for that.
For Mrs. Wing and for Mr. DeBruin, the next agenda item, writing of a handbook is an annual task, and updating it and editing it and making it relevant to the coming year. It does not necessarily have a great applause meter to say thanks for all the job, all the work that goes into it, but yet it is a resource that people will refer to over time. So even though you may not get great plaudits coming to you for it, as a school board, we greatly appreciate having a resource for our teachers, for our students, for our parents, and our community. Thank you for your work on the elementary.
I move to approve the elementary handbook.
I'll second that.
We have a motion by Mrs. Ward, a second by Mr. Piatt to approve the elementary handbook. Any further discussion or question regarding this motion? Hearing none, those in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
The opposed? Mrs. Wing, your work is approved. Thank you very much. Item number 14 is to approve the secondary handbook. We'll turn to Mr. DeBruin.
Well, thank you. And again, I appreciate the opportunity to review the handbook as a whole, with fresh eyes. Coming in from the outside, it's 61 pages to review. And in reading it, you could sense multiple drafts, authors and administrators, and So I did some work, but I'll admit it was challenging in the first several drafts to try to condense where possible, bring things together, etc. I do want to thank board member Sherman for sending me some additional editing help. Very welcome, particularly when it comes to trying to find that consistent format. I look forward to implementing those changes as well. As I mentioned, my highlights in the board packet, some of the changes that occurred were introducing the term reopening where appropriate, trying to find a consistent organization and format. And I'll be honest, one of those things that needs to be revisited is the table of contents, because I think it did lose a couple of pages in that restructuring. I just want to share too, one of the other challenges was there were a tremendous amount of work clearly went into the pandemic secondary handbook of last year, but that also meant that current drafts sometimes lost connections to certain previous standing explanations that had existed. And so I want to thank Ms. Eckhart for giving me access to previous versions again. And I'm looking forward to sort of living with this handbook and being able to take a critical eye towards how it lives and breathes in an in-person school. Among the other changes were bringing in the new board approved 9-period day. Probably one of the biggest revisions was looking for consistency between a couple of sections in the handbook, in sections 2 and 9, around personal communication devices or phones. I did
put through some updates there that I think are more reflective of the current status of the way we all use phones, not just students, but adults as well, and try to draw a clear line that between the bells and instructional time, phones may have a place if the instructors wish it, but otherwise, that's a time where, you know, they should be kept away unless directed otherwise. But outside the bells, that students have access to their devices. As I travel down my highlights, I also updated some language to reflect the reopening handbook with regard to visitors. Placing in the appendices, the protocols at a glance for grade 6 and for grade 7 through 12, as well as continued transportation location maps. The reinstitution of previous handbook language, because again, these were a couple of areas where there was just last year's version did not speak to these issues as clearly. Physical education, tardiness, and lunch and IMC. I've had a few parents and others reach out to me about FIAD uniforms. And I'll be honest, I need to do more investigation with FIAD staff about exactly what current practice is. And we will take a reasonable and thoughtful approach to that. But I just, until I get together with those folks, I wanna make sure that we get them what they need to run the class, their class the way they need to.
Thank you, Mr. DeBrew. Board members, any questions for our secondary principal regarding the secondary handbook?
I would just do the same as I did before, which is thank you, Mr. DeBrew, for putting this in when you have a full plate already. One thing in particular that I like about yours, and also I see it noted in the elementary handbook as well as the reference to actual policy numbers, I think that's very important, especially since there is often policy language within these handbooks. The policy numbers make it easy for families to go to our direct policy, as we clearly state all approved board policies supersede any of these handbooks should they be different, if we make changes mid-year. So I very much appreciate that. And I'm always happy to help in the policy department if you need reference numbers.
Yozo. Mr. Brew, we appreciate your taking a holistic look at the handbook. Oftentimes, as you commented, it's an amalgam of past writers. We should comment that sometimes people write as they speak. Mm-hmm. So you are taking a stick to that handbook and shaking a few words out. Will it be appreciated? Any other questions for Mr. DeBrew?
There is some in the chat.
I'll get there. We have a question from a parent with regard to status. As Britta Nelson writes, as a parent of a sixth grader, I am curious about the handbook I received in the mail. Is the sixth grade a secondary grade or an elementary grade?
It's a secondary grade. Is she referring to the reopening handbook? That had to be different based on vaccination eligibility.
I'm guessing she's referring to the reopening plan that was received by parents.
Yes. So that plan is specific to our pandemic and how are we reopening the school. And we are specifically separating students who are not eligible for the vaccine. So that was written with that in mind, but does not have anything to do with the actual structuring of grade levels for elementary and secondary. So our elementary is K-5, our secondary is 6-12. And at any time when students in sixth grade or any children under the age of 12, we have to watch the environment, watch the day-to-day operations of the school, watch the flow of traffic. We have to monitor all those things. And there may be times where students who are in secondary may have to mask because they are working with students who don't have choice of vaccination, who are in sixth grade. So that's going to be a tricky thing that we're working through, but we will continue to monitor that situation and make the plans as individualized, differentiated as we can.
Thank you, Mrs. Van Meer. Mr. DeBrew, Mrs. Wing, when might elementary and secondary handbooks be made available to parents? As they look at each other. When will the secondary handbook be available to students and parents?
Well, I would seem to run through a few edits.
I did not hear you.
End of the week?
Wow.
Thank you. I think that further clarifies to the parent question that the handbook received was the reopening handbook. The elementary and secondary handbooks have not yet been distributed.
I think the question brought up a good point, though. Might it be something that we want to have a recommendation that all students should have masks available? I believe we have, and please tell me if I'm wrong, but in the last year, we had disposable ones available for students should they need one. But because I think that Mrs. Van Meer makes a good point about if there are students who are sixth grade or under present, if there's a program and you have sixth, seventh, and eighth grade at the program, seventh and eighth graders will need to mask up. I think it would benefit our families to know that all students should have a mask available, even if masks are optional, in the event they need it for having students that are not vaccine eligible. I don't know if that fits within the handbook or where, but.
We see nodding from Mrs. Van Meer. I think you've made your point. Thank you. Before we move on to the next agenda item, there were comments that were made earlier that I missed. Mrs. Bauman. Comments with regard to Mrs. Shiraz's employment. Wow, this is a great hire. Welcome aboard. And with regard to Mrs. Wing's recommendation for a special education teacher, she thanks Mrs. Wing for advocating for our kids. We have a follow question or comment from Mrs. Krause before we move on to the next agenda item. I think we should give them more time than by the end of the week. How about by the end of next week? Mrs. Krause, I believe it's adequate to say that they'll be forwarded when they're complete.
Mrs. Krause, thank you for advocating for our two principals. I appreciate that.
I have a number 15 this evening.
Do we need an approval of this secondary handbook?
Oh, we haven't voted.
Yeah.
We have a motion.
I move to approve the secondary handbook.
I'll second.
We have a motion by Mrs. Ward, a second by Mr. Piatt to approve the secondary handbook. We've beat this one up pretty good. All those in favor of the motion, please say aye.
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 Aye. The opposed? Mr. DeBrew, you have a handbook that's been approved. Now keep editing.
Right.
Now item 15 to approve proposed new policy and amendments to the following board policies. Mrs. Sherman.
Having not received any comments, questions, or feedback on these policies between last meeting and now, I will go through and run through them. As always, please stop me if you have a policy that you wish to discuss prior to motion or before approval. So I move to approve amendments to policy 3139 and 4139 staff discipline.
I second.
We have a motion by Sherman, a second by Ward to approve amendments to policies 3139 and 4139 staff discipline. Are there any questions regarding this motion or the proposed amendments? Hearing none, those in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion passes.
I move to approve amendments to policy 2411, school counseling.
Second.
We have a motion by Sherman, a second by Ward, to approve amendments to policy 2411, school counseling. Are there any questions regarding this motion and the recommendation? Hearing none, those in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Thank you.
I move to approve amendments to policy 5113, open enrollment program interdistrict.
Second.
We have a motion by Sherman, a second by Ward, to approve amendments to policy 5113, open enrollment program interdistrict. Are there any questions regarding this motion or the recommendations? Hearing none, those in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. The motion, the opposed? The motion passes. Thank you.
I move to approve policy 5895, student employment.
Second.
We have a motion by Sherman, a second by Ward, to approve amendments to policy 5895, student employment.
Actually, just so you know, this is not an amendment in the motion. It's just the policy. This is a new policy proposed.
Thank you very much. No amendments to approve a new policy, 5895, student employment. Does the second agree with that? Mm-hmm. Are there any questions or about the motion or the recommendation? Hearing none, those in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion passes.
I move to approve amendments to policy 5540, the schools and governmental agencies.
Second.
We have a motion by Sherman, a second by Ward, to approve amendments to policy 5540, the schools and governmental agencies. Are there any questions regarding the motion or the recommendation? Hearing none, those in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. The opposed? The motion passes.
I move to approve new policy 1211, whistleblower protection.
Second.
We have a motion by Sherman, a second by Ward, to approve new policy 1211, whistleblower protection. Are there any questions regarding the motion or the recommendation? Hearing none, those in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. The opposed? The motion passes. Item number 16 this evening is to approve the payment of bills.
Move to approve the payment of bills. I'll second.
We have a motion by Helm, a second by Piatt, to approve the payment of bills. Are there any questions regarding the bills included for payment in your packet this evening? Hearing none, those in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
The opposed? The motion passes. We will pay our bills. Item number 17 is to accept donations. Mrs. Van Meer.
Thank you. We have a wonderful donation. It is anonymous, and it is a donation of a baby grand piano to the Gibraltar Music Department. I believe it is similar to the piano that Mrs. Bondison has in her choir room, and I do believe it's being added to the elementary music program. So that, what a generous donation, and I look forward to seeing that.
I saw some information from the maestro looking for able-bodied persons to move a piano.
Yep, that's it.
Yeah. I hope Charlie found some able-bodied and strong backs. Is there a motion to accept donations?
I move to approve donations with thanks.
We have a motion by Sherman, a second by Ward, to accept donations with thanks, a baby grand piano with many thanks. Mm-hmm. Those in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The motion passes.
So, and I would say that thanks is for the donation, but also to those who helped our maestro move that into our building for our students. So thank Certainly. You to all around.
I move to adjourn.
Second.
We have a motion by Piatt, a second by Ward to adjourn. We are adjourned. Thank you very much for your attention to our agenda this evening. Thank you to our audience for participating and being with us for this important board meeting. Good evening.